This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
In this case, the EV does not need to be subsidized. I mean, Trump's motives are malign, if you ask me, but I think we're getting to the point where it's okay to take that subsidy away. I don't think it's really necessary now. I think it's a challenge to automakers to build EVs and price them fairly that people can afford them, not base them all on luxury cars, and do some really creative stuff at the entry point of the market at a reasonable price.
This week on Sea Change Radio, we'll get the latest on the electric vehicle consumer market from automotive expert Jim Motovalli. We'll look at some new models worth checking out if you're considering buying an EV, examine the impact of the Trump tariffs on the industry, and look at how foreign automakers from Germany to China are improving their electric vehicles. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Jim Motovalli. He is an author of 10 books and an auto writer who contributes to Barron's and Auto Week. Jim, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
Great to be on.
Last time we spoke, it was a couple of years ago, and you kind of gave us an overview of the electric vehicle industry. I remember you had just come back from a test drive of a Lucid high-end EV, and you were raving about it. Things have really evolved quite a bit on the market globally. I want to dive into how the Trump administration is holding back the development or the proliferation of these EVs a little bit in the US, but let's just look at the market as a whole. First, maybe you can catch us up to the Chevy versus Ford competition when it comes to electric vehicles. They've kind of gone in different directions.
I think General Motors actually has the better of the two terms of their approach, because they have both the Chevy Equinox EV and the Blazer EV. They're coming out with the Bolt EV, and they're targeting the lower end of the market, but cars that have that are relatively affordable but also have good range, like 300 mile range. And that's why the Chevy Equinox EV is the best selling non-Tesla EV in the US right now. Because I think it hits the sweet spot that you need. And it's also priced at around, $36,000. And that's very attractive to consumers right now.
The Bolt, when we spoke last, I think had been shelved by General Motors, but it's come back. Why? And what does that tell us about how the market is changing?
Well, when GM shelved the Bolt, there was a big outcry because it was a stupid decision. There was absolutely no reason to make that decision. It's selling fairly well.
And it was a good car generally, right?
Yeah, generally a very good car. And that led them to second guess themselves. And they announced they were bringing the Bolt back. But they haven't actually done it yet. We haven't actually seen it. But I think it's going to be a nice package because the earlier one was. And I assume they'll finally get it to 300 miles of range. And otherwise, it'll be a nice, small EV with very good acceleration. And it's one of the EVs I would consider buying.
And it's under $25,000, probably, right in that range?
Well, it's speculative because they haven't announced it yet, but probably around. And that's what, again, makes it very attractive to consumers, because if you do EVs right, they won't even cost more than gasoline cars. Right now, one of the major things holding them back is the price premium you have to pay to get into one. And especially because a lot of the car makers have been concentrating on EVs at the higher end of the market, which I don't understand. I understand that it costs a lot to put batteries in EVs, and it's hard to make money with cheaper EVs, but that's what the public wants. China is poised, if they could ever get through the Trump tariffs, which is unlikely, to offer EVs at much cheaper price points, and they're doing that around the world, especially in Europe and Latin America. A lot of the cars you're going to see on the road in the near future in both Europe and South America, and probably in Africa too, are Chinese-made EVs because the Chinese car industry is almost wholly concentrated on EVs now.
Have you had a chance to drive any of the Chinese EVs?
Yes, and I think they're generally pretty good. And they've made general leaps and bounds from when I first drove them. And I drove a bunch of Chinese EVs in China maybe 10 years ago. And at that point, there was very little to recommend them. They were not up to global standards. Today, they are. And I was recently on a drive with the Chinese-made Polestar 4.
Oh, that's Chinese made?
Yeah, that one, I believe that's made in China.
Because that's a beautiful car.
Yeah, and Polestar is Chinese owned by Geely. And what I'm seeing now is something like $21,000 will buy you a pretty nice Chinese made EV. And they're using inexpensive battery packs and integrating a lot of world-class infotainment into them. The build quality is a lot higher. I haven't driven a lot of them, but I was recently in a Vietnamese-made VinFast at the Nassau Coliseum. I got to take a ride in one of those. And the early write-ups on those were really scathing about how terrible they were. But by the time I got into one, which is maybe a year and a half later, they had really done a lot to make it more roadable. And the price is still way too high. They're not in the Chinese realm. And the one I drove was $65,000, and it was absolutely not competitive at that price point.
And you mentioned the Chevy Blazer electric. I remember last time we spoke, I think Ford was just introducing the F-150 Lightning. That has not been the success that a lot of people predicted. Why?
The mistake that Ford has made is concentrating too heavily on trucks. I mean, they virtually eliminated their whole car fleet except the Mustang. And the only car EV they have is the Mustang Mach-E, which is a fairly competitive entry. I like that one. It's probably not one I'd buy, but I think it's okay. They don't have a range. They don't have the range that GM has at this point.
When you say range, you don't mean the mileage range. You mean like the variety of vehicles?
The variety, yeah, they don't have the same variety that GM has. And if you don't like the Mustang Mach-E, you're kind of out of luck, unless you want that pickup truck you just mentioned, the F-150 Lightning, which is
It's not a Rivian.
no. And yeah, the Rivian, which I finally got to drive for the first time. I had not driven a Rivian, and I drove this insane four motor version of the Rivian that gets to this is the pickup truck. That gets to 60 in like 2 seconds. I mean, it's insane. Ford doesn't have something like that, but I don't think you really need a four motor pickup truck anyway. I personally am fans of single motor EVs over the dual motors with all wheel drive. I think most cases you don't need the all wheel drive, and you don't need the extra expense, and you lose range, and they're more expensive. So I wouldn't buy one.
Well, I mean, most people don't really need pickup trucks either, or SUV-sized vehicles, but that seems to be the expectation for American motorists now, is like that one time a month where you need to haul something that requires you to buy an enormous urban assault vehicle.
Well, Alex, you've just hit upon a fallacy that I think a lot of Americans get caught up in, which is that you need to buy a vehicle that you're only going to use once a month. I don't think you do. You can do without it, borrow it from somebody or rent it or something. I still remain a big fan of the Lucid brand. I think that's like the, if I could afford it, they're still pretty expensive. If I could afford it, I'd probably buy the new Lucid Gravity, which is their SUV. Is really impressive. I thought it would take off more than it has. I don't quite understand. My wife actually invested in Lucid stock, which was not a good idea, and it has lost more than 90% of its value, but luckily she didn't spend too much on it.
Still beautiful cars.
They are beautiful cars. I don't know. They're not doing nearly as well as Rivian is. And Rivian is much more high profile, and Lucid has never really managed to penetrate the public consciousness, but I hope people do discover them because they're really nice cars.
Don't you be late.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to auto writer Jim Motovalli. So, Jim, we were talking about the Lucid and the Rivian, but also there's another new manufacturer in the EV space that I've heard of that I have not driven and don't know much about, but I'm interested in your take on the Slate. What are Slate vehicles all about?
I was actually about to mention them because I think they're a fascinating company because they've basically decided that people do want pickup trucks, but they want bare bones pickups without even, necessarily a radio. And these are electric vehicles. It's a startup company. They're talking, I don't know, I think $25,000 would get you one fairly well equipped, and it has decent range. But, it's a utilitarian vehicle without a lot of fan. I think it even comes with wind-up windows.
We mentioned range in terms of mileage with vehicles. I thought when Ford did that deal with Tesla and allowed Ford owners to start accessing the Tesla supercharging network, that it would be a real game changer for Ford in terms of the marketplace for EVs, but it hasn't really moved the needle.
Keep in mind, Alex, that every auto manufacturer made the same basic deal. So the new standard is the Tesla standard. So every automaker is going to be using Tesla standard. Basically, the industry decided that the Tesla standard is indeed better. And actually, that's not the main reason. The main reason is because Tesla has by far the best EV charging network in the country, way more stations than anyone else.
But you almost never see non-Teslas at Tesla charging stations.
You'll see that a lot more. Just about all the new EVs are going to come out with Tesla plugs.
I see. When I was on the East Coast last year, I looked at renting an EV, and it was cheaper than a gas-powered vehicle from the major rental agencies. But I had a quick turnaround from an appointment that I had to get to the airport, and I was kind of mapping it out, and I didn't see the proliferation of charging stations in the East Coast the way we have in Northern California. So I just decided I'll just get a combustion engine rental. I was amazed by how few electric vehicles I saw on the trip relative to the Bay Area.
Well, your perspective is a little skewed
Sure.
because the Bay Area is absolute ground zero for EVs in America. I was in Berkeley recently. I could not believe how many EVs are on the road. It's like maybe 40 or even 50% of all the cars on the road are EVs or plug-in hybrids. And on the East Coast, it's more 1 in 10. So, yeah, there's not nearly as many, but we still have a very robust charging network that includes lots and lots of Tesla stations, and almost all the major highways have charging. In fact, I recently drove an EV from Connecticut here. It was a Genesis GV70, I think. I drove it from Connecticut to Washington, D.C., and back. And didn't really have any trouble charging at all, except on the way back where the chargers on the New Jersey Turnpike were in transition. They were putting in a new vendor's EV chargers, so none of those were working. So that was a bit of a problem. I ended up in a mall in the middle of the night, but Aside from that, there's pretty good charging network now on the East Coast.
Like you said, with your experience in Berkeley, the disparity is stark. I have a friend on the East Coast who asked me about Teslas being vandalized and the like when Elon Musk was working for the government and just destroying the Tesla brand name by the day. And he asked me, are they safe there? And I was like, I was walking my dog at the time, and I was like, I could see five Teslas on this block right now. And most of them have either an anti-Elon Musk sticker on it, or they've paid to have the logo removed from the car. So you see a lot of those.
People have done that. In fact, I saw a Cybertruck in New York City a couple of days ago that had an anti-Elon. It said something like, "I like the car, not the guy." I think Elon Musk's machinations, which I deplore, in the Trump administration, actually, I think affected the brand more in Europe than it did in the United States, because there's a dramatic drop-off in Tesla sales in Europe. And I haven't seen so much that in the US. But it's interesting if you look at, say, Tesla in China, you see that Tesla has been overtaken in sales by not one but two Chinese brands at this point. And people are really underestimating the Chinese auto market right now. It is wholly electric, it is very focused, it is government supported, it is global in reach, and it's going to take over, ex unless it's forced out by artificial subsidies and tariffs, which is what's happening right now. But I think the Trump administration's approach to EVs is extremely heavy-handed. And if you look at some of the early executive orders, Trump actually ordered all the EVs and the federal fleet decommissioned. And they were going to rip up every charger that the government has. And maybe when he found out there's like 300,000 EVs in the federal fleet, he backed off on that. I don't think that actually went through. Some EV chargers got unplugged. This is kind of stupid retaliatory moves he's been making on all these different fronts. And it's just because liberals like them. I mean, EVs are not a political tool. They're not left wing or right wing. They're just a more efficient form of transportation. I wish we would understand that. And even if you don't believe in global warming, which most of his administration doesn't, then we're going to end up with EVs, whether Trump likes it or not.
I mentioned the tariffs in passing earlier in our discussion. How have they affected some of the better-known foreign-made brands in the US? Have sales been affected by the tariffs yet, or is this just something that's kind of hanging over the industry like a sword of Damocles?
Well, even before Trump removed the $7,500 federal income tax credit for EVs, which is one of the first things he did on coming into office, we were already seeing sort of a decline, not in EV sales, but in the rate of increase of those sales. This is particularly as a point that rankles me because people don't get it right. They just refer to a big drop off in sales, which actually did not occur. The sales continued to go up, but not at the same rate that they were going up before. And because batteries have gotten cheaper, and because automakers have been bringing the price down, at least on certain cars, the loss of the federal income tax credit was not as big as it might have been. It didn't affect sales as much as it could have. We're talking about the Chevy Equinox. The price without the subsidy is less than the average price for a gas car today. So you don't expect your gas car to be subsidized, right? So in this case, the EV does not need to be subsidized. I mean, Trump's motives are malign, if you ask me, but I think we're getting to the point where it's okay to take that subsidy away. I don't think it's really necessary now. I think it's a challenge to automakers to build EVs and price them fairly that people can afford them, not base them all on luxury cars, and do some really creative stuff at the entry point of the market at a reasonable price. That's what is actually selling. That's why a car I would consider buying, which does have tariffs on it, but they change day to day, so I'm not sure what they are right now, is the Korean-made Hyundai Ioniq 5 and 6. I like those a lot. They're reasonably priced. And in some cases, the automakers have not actually passed the subsidies on to increase the retail price. In fact, I haven't seen all that much of that. Ferrari, for instance, raised its prices on a lot of its models, but not a lot of automakers have done that. I think Audi just announced a price hike on some cars. You know, they have cars that are made in the US and they have cars that are made in their home country, and they sort of average them out. It's not like the ones that have the tariffs on them are the ones that get big price increases. That wouldn't make sense, really, to do that. So they sort of spread the pain around to all their models, so they just get maybe a modest price increase. So I'm not seeing huge price increases on cars because of the tariffs so far, but there's been some.
She said, "Listen, babe, I got something to say. I got no car and it's breaking my heart. I got a driver and that's a start. Maybe you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star. Maybe you can drive my car. Maybe I love you.
This is Alex Wise on SeaChange Radio, and I'm speaking to auto writer Jim Motovalli. So, Jim, I know that there's some accounting for these country-by-country disparities in the marketplace. Just from the Biden administration's Inflation Reduction Act, there was some legislation put forth that made it more expensive if you got an electric vehicle that had a battery, let's say, sourced in China. I'm thinking of the Tesla Model Y versus the Tesla Model 3 for a while, where even though the Model 3 is around $7,000 to $10,000 less expensive than the Model Y, it was getting its batteries from China, so it didn't qualify for the $7,500 immediate tax credit, while the Model Y did. So you could buy the Model Y for the same price as the Model 3, basically.
That just shows the different approaches of the Biden and Trump administration. Because Biden, in legislation he passed, a lot got subsidies in on automakers who built plants in the U.S. And they were eligible for the tax credit. That was crucial to a lot of automakers, especially a few years ago. And they announced a lot of plant construction in the U.S., which is what we wanted. Now, the Trump approach has also led a number of car makers to say they were going to build plants in the U.S. I just think the Biden approach was better, and it didn't penalize consumers.
Jim, maybe you can give us an overview of some of the traditional premium imported brands and their electric vehicle entry into the U.S. market. I'm thinking of Honda and Subaru and BMW, Audi, like Subaru's for the longest time did not make an electric vehicle, which seemed mystifying to me since their target demographic was people generally who cared about the environment, who probably were not climate change deniers.
Automakers have been wildly disparate in their approach to EVs. And you have companies like Toyota and Subaru, who you mentioned. Toyota resisted building an EV for the longest time and then only did it in partnership with other automakers. But in some ways, but also went in on plug-in hybrids pretty heavily. And that looked dumb at the time. It looks smarter now because people are really into plug-in hybrids, so they're selling. And Toyota finally started rolling out some EVs. They're not particularly competitive. I don't think their EVs are the best. But in Subaru, too, like you said, they really held back on EVs, and they're starting to build them now. They're very late. They do not have any really distinguished EVs. You've got German automakers like Audi, Mercedes, and Volkswagen. BMW that gone pretty heavily into EVs. They tend to be pretty expensive and don't sell in huge numbers in America yet. But their EVs tend to be very good. They're just not very affordable. That's the main problem. And the range isn't always that great. And I'm sure they're very good. Like the Mercedes builds beautiful EVs, but the prices are astronomical on those things.
How do they compare versus their combustion engine, like Mercedes? Is there a big premium of the EV built in?
Their gas cars are expensive too, but I'm not sure you're going to get into a Mercedes EV for less than about $50,000 or something, maybe a little bit less than that. But I just don't see that as being the sweet spot of the market right now. If you want to sell cars in large numbers, you want to compete with Tesla. You want to be positioned for somehow the Chinese getting into the American market. You better have some affordable EVs in your portfolio, I think. So I think the Koreans are making the best, both Kia and Hyundai are making, like, to me, the best EVs and GM. I would put GM and Hyundai at the top of my list in terms of making practical EVs that people should buy. I think both Rivian and Lucid make very credible cars. They're also very expensive. And they're not a mass market car, but at least the Rivian, people have really taken to them. I see way more Rivians on the road than I do Ford F-150 Lightnings, which is an interesting point that you made earlier, that the Lightning hasn't. And I think,
Isn't Rivian gonna come out with a sedan as well eventually?
yeah, they're coming out with lower priced models, definitely, and they're diversifying. But the original target for the F-150 Lightning was like $40,000, and it didn't achieve that. And it's like your car with the wind up windows. If you can find one, find an entry level F-150 Lightning, you probably should get it. I think it's a I don't think it's a bad vehicle. And the F-150 is the most popular vehicle in America, and for many years it has been. So it's not surprising that they targeted that to electrify. But the buying public for F-150s is fairly conservative, and they haven't really turned on to EVs yet, but I think that will come. Like, the Rivian buyer is way more likely to be a Biden voter than a Trump voter. Just a guess, I don't know.
Well, I always appreciate your insights, Jim, and I should have also mentioned that you had a piece out in Sierra Magazine earlier this year, a sort of EV buying guide, and we'll link to that on our site. Jim Motavalli, thanks so much for being my guest on SeaChange Radio.
Thank you.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by The Meters, Jimi Hendrix, and Bobby McFerrin. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.